Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night on a Monday right here, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and on the 101.3 ESPN app. We go up until 7 o'clock today, and Rich has done some math for us.
Yeah. Well, no, I did what Al Gore told me to do, or you told me to do.
Yeah, Google.
I went to the internet. Yes.
Okay, so yeah. 20 pounds of heroin and cocaine is what?
Yeah, Esteban Loaiza is in some trouble. That's 44 pounds.
That sounds like way too much. I think.
Well, 1 ounce.
1 ounce is too much. But
44 pounds.
44 pounds.
Oops.
Of heroin and cocaine. So I don't know what Esteban Loaiza's future holds, but I'm sure a cell features prominently in it. All right. Rich, are you going to stay with me for the whole hour?
No, I'm out of here.
Rich is out of here.
I'm going to go watch the Olympics.
Good. You should.
So that skaters won't fall.
Yep, you should. Okay. Right. Double Lutz, triple toe.
Yeah, that.
Okay.
Sow cow.
That's right. Triple sow cow.
Is that right? Did I say that right?
Yes.
A triple sow cow.
Yes, and the triple axel. And the woman last night was the first American to ever do a triple axel in an Olympic competition, which shocks me. I would have thought Nancy Kerrigan or Tonya Harding even had done it. Michelle Kwan.
What I want to know is, when do the Vermonters get involved here?
Aren't they already in it at snowboarding? Lindsay Jacobellis and them?
I want to see golds.
Jeez.
Let's go.
Wow.
This is
why nobody likes you. Champlain Valley Game Night. Rich is out of here. Arnie's sick. He'll be back in the huddle tomorrow. We do have a lot coming up this week. We do have a lot coming up today. Trivia, City Sports Grill. That's Wednesday, 7:30 to 9:30. Arnie will be hosting. It is Valentine's Day. We know that. Look, if you're in a happy, committed relationship, come on out to trivia. If you're single and just want to celebrate the love you have for yourself, come out to trivia. We've also got Half Price Burgers. That's the place to be. So we're back in action after a snow day last Wednesday when we got that 8 to 10 inches of snow in various places around the state. So that is Wednesday. Friday, we're kicking off the first stop on the 101.3 ESPN Winter Craft Beer Tour. We'll be at First Republic Brewery out in Essex. I've been there twice. Absolutely great spot. They've got games in there. You know, you talk about Cards Against Humanity. They've got card games. Kevin and the boys over there do a great job. Looking forward to going there. They've got a special menu coming in. Friday night is always pizza and a pint, but they also are bringing in a special menu for us. Barbecue is going to be in there. Definitely, if you live in the Essex area, not that far from Five Corners, this is it's a fun spot, and we're going to be doing a bunch of these winter craft beer remotes, so always looking forward to those. We kick it off this Friday. As for what's coming up on the show today, Lou DeMasi is going to stop by in 20 minutes. He's going to talk about his career at Norwich University. So local guy, Lou DeMasi was a two-time All-American and a national champion for the Norwich men's hockey team back in 04. So he's going to join us, talk about his career, what he did after Norwich, and now what he's doing locally to help the hockey community in this area. And then you might know his dad as well. His dad spent 25 years as the head men's hockey coach at St. Mike's and won a national championship for that program. One of the other things we'll talk about with Lou DeMasi is the introduction of the Baja Cup, which is a new rivalry trophy given out in the Burlington High School and Colchester High School hockey rivalry. We'll talk a little bit about that after we talk with Lou also. We'll get a little more into the Cavs and Celtics. You can always get in on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. But first, I got to talk about this. Today is February 12th, and this is a very significant day to me. Happy anniversary to me. It is the four-year anniversary of my first job in radio, the day I got my first job in radio. And, you know, I've told this story, you know, in parts on the air. I think a lot of you know parts of my background. I've never really gotten into all of it except for maybe one day. So I'll tell a little bit of that story now, but I'm 28 years old, and I've had the opportunity to do what I think are a lot of really cool things. Just got back from my third Super Bowl. I've covered the NCAA tournament, Division I level in men's ice hockey. I was there for the regional finals of the men's ice hockey tournament. I've seen UVM, sat center court for UVM you know, finishing off a perfect season, 19-0 last year, and getting to the NCAA tournament. I've gotten to do what I think are a lot of really cool things through this job. And getting to that point was not easy. And I think any of you who are, you know, established in your life, whether that means you're 28, 48, 58, whatever it is, I think you all probably had a moment where you finally realized, like, okay, my life is finally clicking. Like, the confusion of being a teenager or just being younger finally wore off. And for me, that day happened about a year and a half into my first radio job. So this day 4 years ago, it didn't mean that I had figured everything out, but it meant that I was on the road to figuring everything out. And if you're young and listening, you're in the car, you're a high schooler, you're in the car, you're a college guy, you just haven't hit that moment yet, you're going to. And when you do, it's going to feel pretty good. And I just kind of go back to where I was 4 years ago and what had happened. So, look, you guys know I went to Oswego. I graduated in 2012, and I majored in journalism, but I was more into broadcasting. And actually, in college, I really did no radio. I thought I did a lot of TV stuff. I was the broadcaster for the basketball team and the hockey team. And for Oswego hockey, they were, you know, number one in the nation a lot of my time there. So, you know, it was a big deal, or at least I thought it was a big deal. And then when it came time for graduation, to apply for graduation, I was like, what am I going to do? I had skated through Oswego on talent, but I was so busy playing baseball that I didn't really have the work ethic when it came to broadcasting to do much of anything other than just be talent. I didn't bother, you know, quote, bother. And if any of our TV people are listening, you know, friends at NBC5 or Local 2244 or CBS or whatever, I didn't take the time to learn how to run a camera. I didn't take the time to learn how to even coil cables. Like, anything that needs to be done at a television station, I did not know how to do other than just talk. Because I felt so, you know, at the time, I felt like I was so good. I had no idea that I wasn't. And then it came time for graduation. I'm like, what am I going to do? The New York Yankees aren't calling for me to be their play-by-play guy. So I'm like, this whole degree is going to go to waste because I just can't do anything. And when you talk about people who, you know, we go and we watch, you know, Jack Cordy at NBC5 and Darren Aaron and all these people locally, they're doing everything. You know, they're running their own cables. They're producing their own videos. Some of them are doing their own camera shots. I didn't know how to do any of that stuff. So I went to Norwich. I worked there for a year, and I did an internship in their athletic department. And I got to do a lot, and I thought I did it well. But I also coached baseball, and I realized that I loved coaching baseball. And I thought that's what I was going to do. I thought that I had a future in working in an athletic department, coaching baseball, and having a second job somewhere in media, like being a sports information guy, a PR guy at the athletic department. I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. So I went back to Norwich to try to get that internship for a second year. And they said, no, they said, you need to, you know, you're being paid to do the media stuff, not coach baseball. And they said, unless you're willing to give that up, we're not going to hire you. And I wasn't. So they didn't hire me. So that's why I left Vermont the first time. And then I went to a small Catholic school in Pennsylvania. I did the same thing. And I coached baseball and I worked in the athletic department and I was having a miserable time. I didn't have any friends. Not because, you know, usually I'm good at making friends, but almost everybody else my age in the athletic department had gone to school at that school, and they were all the same age. So they had been friends for 4 or 5 years, and I just wasn't able to crack that club. So I started thinking about, okay, I want to move back home to Albany, and what can I do? I want to coach baseball. So I had a job offer at Hudson Valley Community College, and it was going to pay me $1,500 a year. $1,500 a year. And I wanted to take it. My parents said, this time I was 23. My parents said, you are not coming home to take a job that pays $1,500 a year. At the time, the job I was going to leave was paying $20,000. And a $20,000 job for a 23-year-old was pretty good. And so I started calling everybody. I started calling all the local media places in Albany. And I called the television stations and the newspaper. And I emailed ESPN Radio in Albany, and the program director called me. We had to talk for an hour, and to the end, you know, I felt like things were going to go good, and he goes, can you run a board? And what a board is you know, basically pressing all the buttons here. And I said, no, I can't. And he said, okay, I can't hire you. I can only, that was in early December. said, I can't hire you. I'll keep you posted if anything comes back. So it comes towards January, and I decided to move home anyways. And I took the job coaching. And like the day I got back, which was like January 20th, the program director called me again and said, hey, you know, I know you moved back home, because I think I'd sent him a text. I know you moved back home. I'm going to have something for you soon. I had no idea when that was going to be. February 12th, he calls me, and he says, I've got something for you. And it was that day that I started working in radio. And my first job ever was pressing one button, essentially, from 6 to 10 a.m. Because nobody else who was full-time wanted to work that early in the morning. So I was willing to work for $9 an hour and get up early in the morning and drive in the snow when nobody else was willing to. And that's how I got hired. And I was still, so I was coaching baseball and I was working part time, and I worked for 18 hours a day, essentially, you know, trying to make a living and struggling at doing that. And I thought I was going to coach baseball. I really did. I did this part time thing for like 2.5 years there where I was doing both of them. And then eventually it finally clicked for me that this is what I wanted to do. And I got kind of hosed at the Hudson Valley Community College job coaching. I got kind of screwed over by the athletic department. I was so resentful and I was so angry because I still thought I had a lot to give in coaching and I thought I could do it well. And it ended up being the best thing for me because I pulled back on coaching and I coached in the summer and things like that, but I didn't really make too much of an effort to get back into college coaching. And I got promoted at the radio station, and within 2 weeks of being promoted, I was at my first Super Bowl. And part of the reason why that was able to happen was because I pulled off on the coaching, but none of that would have happened without February 12th, 2014, getting that first job in radio. And, you know, it's kind of a long-winded story, but for me, you know, I will say this. I have lived a very, very great life. You know, I've had parents that have supported me. Both my parents are around. They're both involved financially. Was never really a struggle for us. And if it was, I never heard about it. My parents kept me away from that. So lots of people have lived far tougher lives than I have. You know, I lived the Brady Bunch lifestyle in the suburbs of Albany. So I'm not here to tell you that I've lived a tough life. But professionally, it was a long journey figuring out exactly what I wanted to do and figuring out why I was so entitled in college and thinking I was better than I was, to getting to a point where I figured out what my true passion was, what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, and now, you know, trying to do my best to make that a reality every single day. And it's a privilege for me to be on the air in this market, be on the air and talk with you guys and meet you guys at events. And none of this for me would have happened if 4 years ago today I hadn't gotten that opportunity. So February 12th. Is a significant day to me. If you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. I know a lot of you have similar stories where maybe it took you a while to figure out what you wanted to do, what you wanted to be, how to get there. And a lot of you have figured it out. And I welcome those kind of stories. And, you know, that's a story that I never really tell on the air. It's one I usually save for interns or, you know, my college when they ask me, oh, how'd you get into the business? That's kind of the story that I tell. But that is my story, and you know, when Ryan Russillo came to Burlington and did his show here on October 6th, prior to leaving the Russillo show, he talked about living in Burlington, living on Church Street, not knowing what he wanted to do. And I remember, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but the last line of his show was, you know, this is the easy part. This part, doing the show for me in this case, 4 to 7 every day as part of the Huddle and Champlain Valley Game, like, that's the easy part. Okay, that's the part that it's really, really fun, and it's look, doing sports radio is harder than a lot of people think it is, but it's not brain surgery. You know, this is the easy part, but getting here a few years ago felt impossible. That's what Ryan Russillo said, and that's something that I have taken and something I believe. So February 12th, 2014, without that day, I don't have any chance to be here talking with you today. So I'm appreciative for it and grateful of it. We get a text in from Alex in Burlington. You've been a great addition to our local ESPN station. Glad you put in the work and ended up here. Alex, I appreciate that compliment as well, and it is a privilege and an honor for me to be here also. When we come back, Lou DeMasi, head coach Burlington High School Hockey, also a former national champion at Norwich University, a two-time All-American and a member of the Cadets Hall of Fame. He's got a long list of things on his resume. We're going to touch on all of them. That's next, Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, welcome back to Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Monday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. I got to be honest with you. Usually when I have an interview on, I have a perfect idea where we're going first, exactly what we're talking about, and how I'm introing the person. But every once in a while, you get somebody who's got their hands in so many different things that I just got to say it all and see where the interview goes. This is one of those times. Let's go out to the phone line. We've got Lou DeMasi, a name that a lot of you will remember. So Lou DeMasi played at Norwich University, ice hockey, graduated in 04, won a national championship, is in the Norwich Athletic Hall of Fame, was a two-time All-American, also played pro hockey. His dad used to be the college coach at St. Mike's for 25 years, won a national championship, and now Lou is helped put together pond hockey this weekend, and is now the Burlington High School varsity hockey coach on the boys' side. Lou, that's quite an intro there that took up like almost all of our allotted interview time.
Brady, thanks for having me, and thanks for reminding me of all the stuff too. It's great.
Well, let's start with your career. Let's start with you in hockey. You graduate from Norwich, you win a national championship, Hall of Famer, two-time All-American. Take me back to some of your days in the cadet uniform. What do you remember most fondly?
Yeah, it was a great time, and it's crazy to think it's already been that long. And I think I was lucky to go there at a time where we had a great team, and we lost the national title my sophomore year in overtime, and then we were lucky to host the finals my junior and senior year, where we won a junior year and lost double overtime to Middlebury my senior year. So we had some pretty good runs and a lot of great times, and it was really lucky to be there at that time.
How did you have so much success? I mean, to be a local kid from Burlington, go to Norwich, play so well, how did you have all the success that you had?
You know, I think obviously I was brought up in a hockey family. My father, 25 years at St. Mike's, we were at the rink all day. I'm the oldest of five kids. All five of us played college hockey. My sister at Northeastern and St. Mike's and me in Norwich. And I think it's in the blood, and it's something that, you know, 12 months a year, all day, every day was hockey, and it was fun. And I think it's just something that we all embraced, and it worked out for the best.
What was your path to get to Norwich to play? Because from what I know about college hockey, you know, schools aren't always looking for kids, you know, from this area. If you look at the rosters of the Vermont schools, there's not a lot of Vermont kids on those rosters. It's Canada, it's junior hockey from all over this country. How did you end up at Norwich?
Yeah, I think, when I was at Norwich, it was vast majority of guys on the team were from Canada. And I think by far the only Vermonter. And I got lucky after high school. I went to Northwood in Lake Placid for a year where, you know, it was basically a junior team, and we played 50 games all over the place and getting looked at. And I think if it wasn't for Northwood, I wouldn't have been able to go to Norwich. You know, unfortunately, it would be great if kids could play high school and go there. But it's just not the case. But I got lucky over in Lake Placid, and, things turned out well.
You mentioned your dad coached 25 years at St. Mike's. He won a Division II national championship. What are those memories of being on the ice with him and his teams?
Oh, that was the best growing up. Being at that time, they played in Essex, and going to the rink every weekend and kind of idolizing those guys. And then when I got a little bit older, even sneaking on and practice with them once in a while and going on the road with them. And, you know, that really set my foundation of my brothers and sisters, and it was something that was really special for us to always be at the rink and, you know, going to our games in the morning and then looking forward to a St. Mike's game in the evening.
Was it ever, I don't know, hard to live up to your family name given all the success that your dad was having, or was it something that was pretty easy because you grew up in a hockey family, as you said, you got good, and then it was just your story to write?
Yeah, no, not at all. I think there was never any pressure, and there was never any, you know, obligation or expectation even, you know, and I think it was just something that luckily we were able to just have fun, and the fun turned into obviously a lot of hard work, but, you know, by having fun, we were able to have a lot of success.
And then you spent 4 years playing pro hockey. You did a stint with the Coyotes organization. You did a couple stints in Europe as well. Talk to me about your pro career.
Yeah, I mean, that was something that was just icing on the cake after a good tilt in Norwich and, you know, traveling around, seeing the U.S. and being able to see, you know, all of Europe and living over there was something that I had always dreamed about, never really thought it would happen, but, you know, was so blessed and lucky to be able to have that opportunity coming out of Norwich and something I'll never forget. And you know, it's really molded who I am and, you know, and how I do things.
How hard is it for a Division III guy to get noticed for the pro ranks? I remember, you know, when I worked at Norwich, hearing the stories about Keith Acoin, who came from Norwich and was playing with the Islanders and was doing well at Oswego, where I graduated from. Eric Selick left school early and is playing with the Florida Panthers and has gotten a cup of coffee in the NHL. How difficult is it for a D3 guy to get that notice?
Yeah, it's definitely difficult, and I think luckily, kind of like Major League Baseball, there's a bunch of different leagues below the NHL, and, you know, I don't think a lot of people know there's no Division II hockey, you know, so it's just 1 and 3, kind of weird, but, you know, my 4 years, we had two guys that made the NHL, and that Keith Acoin, he's still playing and leading the league in Germany, and I think being lucky on a team where, you know, I think about 12 to 15 guys made some kind of professional level from Norwich in my time, you know, that really helped me because, you know, a lot of guys were getting looked at the time, you know, and, you know, hard work and a little bit of luck. We'll take it.
Lou DeMasi with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night on a Monday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Played his college hockey at Norwich, doing a bunch locally, which we're going to get to in a second. You won a national title at Norwich. Cadets won the national title last year. How connected are you to the program still as an alumni, and what did that mean to you?
Yeah, I'm still very connected. We, you know, as we all, the five of us kids, grew up playing hockey, now we've all kind of transitioned to coaching. And I know I coach at Burlington High School. My sister Molly coaches the girls team at Burlington High School. My sister Maggie helps out with the Norwich team, the women's team, and my brother Ronnie is on the bench for the Norwich team. You know, so we're still very connected in the game, and you know, I follow Norwich pretty good just because he's on the bench, and it's obviously exciting to see the program still going and Coach McShane, you know, still killing it with the recruiting in the game. So I think it's we're still right in the thick of things.
On the other side of the lake, people are getting pumped because Oswego-Plattsburgh is coming up this weekend, and that game will be in Oswego. Some people think that's the best rivalry in Division III hockey. Other people on this side of the lake will make the case for Norwich-Middlebury in D3. What's your take?
Yeah, I think when I was there, it was, you know, it's funny, we lost in the national championship in overtime, and we had a fan bring over at a banquet a banner that said, at least we beat Middlebury. You know, so I think at that time, it's with the alumni, it was, you know, everything was about Norwich Middlebury, and we packed the house, and we had two games on Nesson, and it was a lot of fun. So, I mean, we obviously, Plattsburgh and Oswego is big over there, but I'd say definitely Middlebury Norwich here.
You mentioned coaching the Burlington High School varsity team. You guys did something pretty cool this weekend. You guys came out on the short end of the stick, but you had something called the Baja Cup, where you guys played against Colchester. What exactly were you playing for, and what does it mean?
Yeah, it was real special. Bubba, who with the Burlington Amateur Hockey Association, started the Baja Cup this weekend, and Burlington Amateur Hockey is a mix of Colchester and Burlington, and obviously when they get to high school, you know, they split the town lines, and it was fun where all these kids have played against or with each other growing up for all the years and now playing against each other. It was fun to start a little tradition, and we had a rough go, a little bit of a tough start, and Colchester played great, and we tip our caps to them, and they took the first inaugural Baja Cup. But I think it's something that's going to be fun and grow, and we're going to get the youth involved with the game in years to come. And it was great to see, you know, the crowd there and supporting. A lot of the parents are friendly with each other and know each other and grew up, you know, raising their kids on the ice together. So it was a natural fit and a lot of fun.
Nice. So you guys, you had a hugely busy weekend. Not only this new rivalry game, but also you guys helped put on the Labatt Blue Pond Hockey Classic, and we were out involved with it all week long from Thursday through Saturday. It was my first time actually being down on the ice for it. Truly, really a fun event. A lot of guys from out of town, guys and women from out of town, came into town. Just kind of take me through this, you know, what this weekend is like. How hard is it to put on, et cetera?
Yeah, it's an extreme challenge to put on. I think we had almost 150 teams coming in, well over 1,200 players, and it's crazy. It's grown to an event where I think 130 out of 150 teams were from out of town, and we almost represented every state in Canada and different countries, and it was something that's special. And every team gets four games, and they play two on Friday, two on Saturday, and I would guess there was well over 3,000 people and probably about 100 cars out on the ice with 14 rinks on Saturday, and the music's blasting and the food's going, the beer tent and Labatt. And it's something that's turned into, it's crazy to think we started 8 years ago. And, it's something that's a great event for not only the players, but, the town and city in a time when there's really not much going on.
Lou DeMasi, a name you've known for a very long time. His father coached at St. Mike's. He played at Norwich, a Norwich Hall of Famer, a member of the Cadet Hall of Fame, a two-time All-American, a national champ, and now continuing on the hockey legacy locally as the head coach at Burlington High School. Lou, we appreciate the time, man. Great story, and we'll talk to you again.
Brady, I sincerely appreciate it. You guys in the huddle are rocking and rolling. Love listening to you guys. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Lou DeMasi. Thank you for the compliment, Lou, as well. It's Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN. And if you want to get in, you can, 802-655-6672. You know, that's a great story about Lou, just his career at Norwich. Just an unbelievable job, and five kids all coming from a hockey family. I mean, those are the stories that you live for. Those are the stories that you get and that you love to hear. You know, Rich called the DeMasi's the first family of high school, or of hockey, rather, in this area. And those are the stories that you love to get. And those are the stories that we love to tell you here on 101.3 ESPN. Another thing I thought that I took away, one of the biggest takeaways that I had from that interview was at the very end. We talked about the Baja Cup. And this is something that I did not know. Now, being from the area out of town, and I'm sure a lot of you did, but if you're not involved in hockey, you might not know it either. Very unique, the situation that happens in towns when it comes to how the youth leagues are structured versus how the high school is structured. And so all these kids from Burlington and Colchester play together growing up, best friends coming up, and then all of a sudden they're split and become rivals in high school. And I think it's great they're playing for something, but that can remain largely friendly. I think back to my own high school and my own youth leagues and how things were set up, and it was set up the complete opposite, and I think it was hugely detrimental. So if you have an experience on either side of this issue, let us know on the Town Fair Tire text line. Again, 802-655-6672. The way my town was set up, I went to a very big high school. My high school graduating class was 729. There were more than 3,000 kids in my high school. So it was a very, very big high school. As a result, my high school encompassed a bunch of towns. So really what happened was when it came in youth leagues, we had two separate youth programs feeding in to our high school. So two pretty good-sized youth programs feeding into one high school. What happened was this. We would end up being rivals all the way through. These guys at Burlington and Colchester, they start out as friends, and you have that friendship that I think at least would create a healthy, friendly rivalry at the high school level. You grow up friends with these guys, and then you want to beat your buddy when it comes time to win on Championship Saturday. That's how I think this probably goes. With us, it was the exact opposite. You started out as rivals. You were adversarial all the way up from 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 15, it didn't matter what it was. You were playing against each other. And no, you didn't live right next to the people because they were from, maybe a neighboring town. But you grew a disdain for this program. We were both really good, and we both had really good players. And you just grew this rivalry. We were always constantly playing against each other, measured against each other. And then you get to the high school program, and now we're teammates. And it was very, very difficult, I think. I don't know that I'm – my high school team, when you combine these programs, we were number five in the state as a senior. Number five in the state. Then we're talking about baseball. Number five in the state as a senior. We got bounced in the first round of our sectional playoff. And if you're in New York, you know what sectionals are. If you're in Vermont, it basically is the first round of the playoffs. But because New York is so much bigger than Vermont, there's more games needed to win a state championship in New York than there are in Vermont. So we got bounced in the first round of the playoffs. And part of the reason why I think we lost is because we never developed that team chemistry in high school. And the reason why was we had grown up not liking each other. And by the time you're seniors, that just didn't go away. We had guys who were on the bench talking about going to play summer ball, and we were still separate in the summer. There were still separate towns in the summer to play for. So we were still, we would play together in high school, and we were still rivals again in the summer. That's how this went, and it never really felt like we were all that close. You know, I remember being in the outfield that day that we lost, and the bench player just saying, oh, can't wait to go play for my summer. Ah, we're going to beat you on this one. It just never felt close. So I like the way this is done better, where you start out as teammates and then get splintered off after those friendships have already formed, rather than start out adversarial and then expect us all to congregate together to try to win a state championship. It just never felt like we were all that close. So I like the way this youth program in hockey, at least between Burlington and Colchester, is set up better than the way it was in my community. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. When we come back, I watched something last night that I already had a great appreciation for, but seeing it on TV gave me an even greater appreciation. It's got local ties. That's next, Champlain Valley Game Night. 101.3.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Monday. One segment to go, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. February 12th, an important day to me. 4 years ago today, I got my first job in the radio business, and it has been the biggest blessing that I could ask for professionally, because I didn't know it, but this is everything that I've ever wanted to do, just come on and talk about sports and meet people and go to events and research things and come on the air and meet our listeners. Again, I had no idea that this is what I wanted, you know, quote, growing up. But I could not be happier with the way things have turned out professionally, and I'm happy to be here. And my first job was 6 to 10 a.m., driving in the snow. I remember having to plow my driveway at 4:30 in the morning just to get here, you know, just to get there on time and press one or two buttons. And then I finally got to the point where I could do some interviews, and they only went online because I wasn't very good and they weren't ready to go on anyone's actual radio show. And then I finally got a show on Saturday mornings for 1 hour talking exclusively local sports. And I would talk to everybody, you know, the high school junior who just broke his soccer team, you know, his school soccer goal scoring record, the college field hockey coach who was going to the NCAA tournament. It didn't matter. I would find whoever I could locally to talk to. And we've come all the way from there to here, and it's been a great ride, and looking forward to it continuing. So Champlain Valley Game Night here. You know, I was watching something last night, and I watched a lot of the Olympics yesterday. After the Cavs Celtics, I watched a ton of the Olympics, but I also flipped through ESPN News and I watched a couple of E60s, and they were all reruns. They're all ones that have aired before, but not ones that I had seen. And I watched the one on Travis Roy, and a lot of you know the name Travis Roy because of the Travis Roy Wiffle Ball Tournament that's in Essex, you know, at Little Fenway Park out in Essex, Jericho-ish. I think it's technically Essex, but it's in the late summer every single year. And the story of Travis Roy, if you don't know, was a college hockey player, very good player, played at Boston University. 11 seconds into his first shift, became paralyzed and has been in a wheelchair ever since. And now he's 45, 46 years old. So we're going on 25 years now more of him being in this physical condition. And I watched the E60 on that, and it just gave me an even greater appreciation for Travis Roy personally and the work that his foundation has done. And it gave me an even greater appreciation for his family, who has helped support him in his quest to, you know, try to end paralysis. It gave me a greater appreciation for the triumphs that he has gone through in his own life to live as close to normal life as you can when being paralyzed. And it gave me an even greater appreciation for having been out there this summer. And this summer was the first summer that I had been at the Travis Roy personally. We broadcasted live from there. We interviewed a bunch of people. And you know about the money that's being raised for his foundation, and you know about, you know, there's a lot of people there, but you don't, until you watch that And until you meet Travis personally and the two are connected for me, you just don't realize just how important it is. And, you know, I knew it was important when I was out there this year, and I knew it was in a cool place, and it was at Little Fenway, and that was awesome. And you knew what was being done was important. And then you go and you watch that and you see it, because Travis Roy does, you know, he doesn't talk a lot at the event, because it's about him, it's for him, but it's for his foundation, and that's really what it's about. And the spotlight becomes off of him very quickly. To hear him and his family talk, you realize just how their road has been. And, you know, to talk about journeys to get places, it's a remarkable story. It's a remarkable story of perseverance and purpose, even though it's wrapped around a really negative incident. But it just gave me a lot of, you know, an even greater appreciation of the Travis Roy Foundation and how lucky I feel to be able to be out there, you know, every single summer now, starting with this past one. And I'm already looking forward. They call it the best weekend of the year. I'm already looking forward to it, even though we're 6 months away or so. So very, very impressive work that they're doing. It was really heartbreaking in some ways and heartwarming in several others. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com. Spring training kicks off tomorrow. If you're excited for spring training, let us know on the text line. Red Sox, Yankee pitchers, they report to spring training tomorrow. Wednesday will be the first workout. And there's a report out that the Yankees are looking for another starting pitcher, Lance Lynn, Jake Odorizzi, formerly of their free agents, but formerly of the Cardinals in Lynn's case and the Rays in Odorizzi's case. Yankees are looking at starting pitchers. The starting pitching is going to be the weakest part of the Yankees. The Yankees' bullpen is dynamite. You talk about Chapman and Betances and Robertson and Canely. They are electric. And Chad Green, they are electric five deep. Five out of seven of their bullpen is outstanding. Okay, and whoever the other two end up being, Brian Mitchell, I don't care, they're going to be above average. So the Yankees have arguably the best bullpen in the league. They're going to have arguably the most power in the league when you throw in Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton and Didi Gregorius. They're phenomenal. Their starting pitching is the weakest part of their team. But I don't think they need to go out and make a move for a starter. You know, they don't need a Lynn. They don't need an Odorizzi. And the reason why is because with their – everybody wants to stay under the luxury tax, and the luxury tax is $197 million. Brian Cashman has said the reason they haven't done anything yet is because they want to leave money available to go make a potential trade deadline move. And I would agree with that. I don't think you need to go out and throw money at a free agent, because you've got all these other great things, great bullpen, great offense, pretty good defense, and now what the Yankees haven't had in forever is some semblance of team speed. They've got that too. I think the Yankees have it all, minus a dynamite pitching staff, a dynamite starting staff. Tanaka, Severino, and Sonny Gray, I figure them to be an above-average three, and then CeCe Sabathia and Jordan Montgomery at 4-5. I think that's good enough when you couple it with the other things that they have there on their roster. When you couple it with how deep that they are overall, I think all of that is good enough to win. I wouldn't force money and go and get a veteran. And in Lynn and Odorizzi's case, they both walked a ton of batters last year. I would try to just say, look, let's go to work with these five. Let's stay healthy. We've got some young prospects that we really like on the way also. They're going to make some debuts throughout the season. Let's keep them in the fold. We've got Brian Mitchell, Luis Sessa, all these other guys that are fringe guys. So let's do what we can with what we have, and let's not go get a Lance Lynn or a Jake Odorizzi, a guy who's going to block some of these young prospects, a guy who's going to block a Chance Adams or a Justice Sheffield, these guys that we've heard about. If you've been following the Yankees and their prospect development for the last 2 years, you've heard about these guys. I don't need to block them, because Tanaka, Severino, Sabathia, and Gray, they're not going to AAA if they're struggling, and outside of Sabathia, they're not getting removed from the rotation. In my mind, if you bring in a free agent, they're not getting removed either. Give yourself some flexibility in the rotation. Give yourself some financial flexibility and allow yourself to maybe make that big move at the deadline where you can get some younger guys that are under team control also. I like where Brian Cashman's doing here. I think the Yankees, it is the weakest part of their team, but I don't think it needs to be addressed right now. One note on the Red Sox. I found this fascinating. We have been talking about J.D. Martinez and talking about him still not having signed with the Red Sox. And why do the Red Sox need him so bad? Well, the Red Sox need him because they don't have any power. Get this. 74 players hit at least 25 home runs last season. 74. That's a record for all time. In no year have more players hit 25 home runs than 74. Okay? 74 players hit 25 home runs or more last season. None were on the Red Sox. Zero. And this is the even more fascinating part. Stanton, Martinez, Judge, Josh Donaldson, and Nelson Cruz all hit more home runs after July 1st than any Red Sox did all season. Repeat. Stanton, Martinez, Judge, Donaldson, and Cruz all hit more home runs after July 1st than any Red Sox player did all season. That is mind-blowing when you talk about Mookie Betts and when you talk about Xander Bogaerts, who's got some power for shortstop, and you talk about Mitch Moreland and was supposed to be Pablo Sandoval. I mean, I think it's going to happen this year. I think Betts is primed for a big year. I think Rafael Devers can have a big year. As long as he gets off to a hot start, I think he can be a big power insertion into the middle of that lineup. Andrew Benintendi hit 20 home runs, but could he hit 25? Yeah, I think he could. I am so pumped for spring training. One, I love baseball, but two, the unknowns with the Red Sox are, there's so many stories there. What will Chris Sale do in the second half of the season this year? We won't even know that until after the All-Star break. How does he hold up in the second half? How is David Price from an attitude and a performance standpoint? How about that bullpen? Can Kimbrel repeat what he did a season ago? How about offense? Can Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts return to form? What will Devers do in year number two, in his first full season? What's Pedroia's health? How will Cora be? There's so many questions. So many questions for the Red Sox. Look forward to unpacking all of it starting tomorrow as pitchers and catchers report to Fort Myers. The Yankees report to the Steinbrenner Complex in Tampa. All right, that will do it for us here today on Champlain Valley Game Night. Thanks to Joe Haggerty, Bruins insider for NBC Sports Boston, for joining us in the huddle. Thanks to my Nana for stopping by, also to talk a little Cavaliers and Celtics. Also, Lou DeMasi here in Champlain Valley Game Night. Trivia on Wednesday at the City Sports Grill, broadcasting live on Friday from the First Republic Brewery in Essex. Tomorrow, Tom Caron's going to stop on by, and the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame, Jeff Idelson, he's going to join us in the huddle also, and we'll be in the Cat's Den in Champlain Valley Game Night, and we've got a cool interview there also. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. 101.3 ESPN.